Welcome to Monty's Gems. We're back again.
Episode number four.
Today we're going to be covering fears.
Yes, sir.
There's going to be a lot in that. I think in starting off, the one thing that I kind of, I guess, wanted to just say is, you know, sometimes you'll ask people what their fears are, and a lot of people claim that they don't have fears. And I think one of the reasons for that is because one of their biggest fears comes from the judgment of others when they're vulnerable. It's really difficult to share things that others can use to label you as being weak. And I believe, you know, true weakness comes from not dealing with your hurt and your pain or trying to face the issues that you have. So in this week, you may see us get a little bit more vulnerable than we've gotten in weeks past, because I think fear is a big issue that people deal with on a daily basis. And I often think that a lot of the times they don't know how to deal with their fears, overcome those fears, or really have a good understanding of where their fears come from.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And people saying that, yeah, a lot of the most common fears are like, yeah, just fear of being judged by other people or something like that. But yeah, actually being vulnerable and telling your fears, or regardless of if it's just like, oh, I'm scared of spiders, I'm scared of heights, or I don't like talking in front of people. There's so many different things just to be afraid of. And I think the most intriguing thing to me is like where those fears come from, whether it's like stems from childhood or something subconsciously. I think that's kind of the most fascinating part to me.
And you actually had brought this specific subject up for us to cover that. Was there a specific reason that fears has stood out to you, or you felt like you have a lot of information to share on it?
No, I think it's just the human psyche. And I don't know, like I said, like the most interesting aspect of it to me is where fears come from, I guess. I'm intrigued by people's experiences and how they vary from person to person, and how I'm living the life that I'm living, but for somebody else that's living in the same planet, same, could be even the same apartment building, they're having a completely different experience. And it's, I don't know, that's just interesting to me, the difference in people's perspectives and what they're afraid of and what they like doing and what they do every day. I just, yeah.
Well, you're 100% right. And it's essentially our circumstances and how the things that have happened to us throughout life. Like, you can have essentially two twins grow up and be two totally different people when they, you know, come to the end of their life. And I don't know if you've ever heard this story where it's two kids. I think that they have parents that were maybe both criminals and they were both in prison. The one grows up to be a very accessible business person, and the other ends up in prison, just like his family. And then they go to ask him, you know, what do you relate this to? Both of them have the same answer. And it was like, well, what else did you expect me to do with the way that I was brought up? One chose the mentality that this is how it is, this is how it's always been, and this is what I'm, I guess, going to be sent to. And where the other one was like, I have to make a better life. Like, this is my opportunity to get up and out of this mess and do something about it, versus this is just what happens to me. So,
yeah, the ability to see, the ability to learn from others' mistakes, I guess, rather than just kind of sulking in, oh, well, this is what it's destined to be, rather than, okay, I definitely do not want to be that person, so I'm going to do everything in my power to not be that person.
Right. I think a little bit has to do, you know, with the victim mentality. But again, with fears, it's the opportunity to be able to, one, deal with your fear, or two, to be able to sit in your house and be afraid of that fear. Which do you choose to do? Both are difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
Difficult to deal. Go ahead.
Last year I started reading a book. Have you ever read the book called Black Swan?
No, but I've heard the Black Swan term used a number of times, so this will be interesting to hear kind of what you have to say about that.
Okay. So basically what I gathered from the book is the black swan is basically just a term you use when something is like out of the ordinary or, you know, and it's one of the main takeaways for me was it went over this scope of what affects your life. And then it went down to the micro, like the micro actions that you do rather than the macro. Like the macro would be like the overall outlook on life, I guess, whereas the micro would be your each individual action that leads to the macro. And okay. It was just, from what I can remember from that one part, it was basically the small little micro actions have a lot more impact on the macro than you really think that it does. And I guess I didn't really realize how that correlated to the black swan, but just doing everything, going in it with the mindset of this is what I want to do and I'm going to do everything that I want it to do, or you see something that you don't want to do and you're going to do everything in your power to not be that person. So like if you don't want to ever be homeless or something like that, then you would take every single step to not be homeless, I guess, whether it be just don't go into debt or don't, I guess I don't really know, but
yeah,
if you can see where I'm coming from with that at all.
Well, from a societal standpoint, we can look at history and what has caused a lot of people to be homeless. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that has to do with drug or alcohol addiction and then abusing those more so than really anything else. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it has to do with mental health and those types of things. So, yeah, I can see where you're coming from is, you know, you can really, I would say, increase your chances of not doing that by really focusing on not being addicted to things, or, you know, I think gambling was another one where had an addiction to gambling, lottery tickets, or whatever it is. It usually has to do with some type of addiction to something to where our mind gets focused on one thing. And I think it has to do with the dopamine that we get from it. And we just enjoy that so much to where we just go off, you know, what is that tunnel vision that they call it, where you just they focus on that, go, go, go. And then you look at your life and it's like, holy cow, like, I don't have a house anymore. I'm living in my car now.
Yeah. And,
So going back to the fears, you brought up the point where you think a lot of people may not understand where their fears come from. When it comes to maybe your specific fears, have you been able to try to label or have a vision of where they've came from or how you've gotten them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, mainly mine are just deal with my personality, I guess.
Okay. So this week I've been trying to research, you know, fears, the different types of fears, phobias, and how they're different. And so it seems like what I came to is that there's two main types of fear. One, and they have to do with an immediate threat. One would either be a physical immediate threat, or the other would be a mental immediate threat. And so that fear is what causes your blood pressure to rise. I don't know about you, but sometimes I think if I have something that I'm afraid of that I see it, or like my hair will stick up on my arms. There's another word like for what that is. Goosebumps. Yeah, right. And so it seems based on definition terms that it's those two things, which I think almost everything are those two things. And you know, mental fear, you can be mentally afraid of all your physical fears no matter what, right?
Yeah.
And like, are there any big fears that you say that you would have been able to overcome?
That I've been able to overcome, I guess. When I was little, I was always very shy and scared to talk in front of people. And now I'm still kind of shy in the sense that I don't like insert myself into conversations that I don't need to insert myself into. But I'm not shy to the point where if somebody starts talking to me, I'm scared to reply or I'm scared to talk in front of people or anything like that. So I guess I would say that's probably the biggest one.
That's interesting because I always, I guess, thought maybe your shyness was more of a respect. Like, you know, you were the youngest of six kids, so you were just being more respectful of listening to everybody else talk. Obviously, you're being younger, so you're probably underdeveloped vocabulary.
Yeah.
You had an underdeveloped vocabulary compared to everybody else because we were all a lot older. But, you know, I mean, you said some pretty funny things when you did say something. I remember that one time we were playing the video game. It was called Museum Caper, and there were specific rules about what one could ask on their turn. And it was like you could ask if one camera can see you. And Jake says, can camera number six see you? And I was like, nope. And you just spouted off like, well, what about number eight?
Yeah.
You already ruined your question, dude, but everybody laughed.
Yeah. I think Josh spit out his Gatorade and then we had to clean it up.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I don't know if it was Gatorade or Pop or whatever, but I do remember. Yeah. And so that's interesting to hear that you say you think that you were would you say you were afraid to speak or were you just shy?
I wasn't necessarily afraid to speak to individual people, but I was definitely afraid to speak when it was like a group of five or more people, or if I had to go up in front of people when I was little and talk, I could not do that.
Really? Yeah. And now if you were to think about putting yourself back into Jake, probably 7 years old, let's say, and you go up there and you sit on that stage, it's not so much that you were afraid to talk, and if you closed your eyes and it was just one person, you could talk to one person. What do you think it was that fear stemmed from? Was it you thought that people would make fun of you? Was it trying to gather your thoughts? Like, this is something that I've always tried to go deeper in terms of my fears or anything that I'm trying to deal with. Have you had any thoughts or thought about that?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of it had to deal with my vocabulary, like you said, or maybe I wasn't, I don't know. I just assumed that people were more educated on the subject of whatever conversation was. So I was just more of listening and kind of learned from what they were saying, because obviously they knew more about it than I did because I was a little kid. So that was my thought process anyways. And yeah, just the idea of not necessarily people making fun of me or anything, just really not having anything to contribute to the conversation and wasting people's time. Because I saw how, I don't know, I see how angry people get when you waste their time sometimes. So it's like, oh, I don't want to do that to them. So I guess that was probably a lot of it.
That's interesting. So can you go deeper on this? When you say you've seen people get angry when you waste their time, like who are you specifically talking about with that?
I guess I can't think of anything in specific, but I guess it was more so like a customer and an employee interaction, just if they weren't necessarily 100% sure what they were talking about. Or you think about those moments where like the Karens, you call them and they're like, oh, go get your manager, and they get upset. And that's not necessarily just because the person's uninformed, but it's probably more so on the Karen themselves. But just people getting frustrated at employees, I guess. And
was this something you saw though, or was this like brought on by TV? Because I guess your first job was, you know, working at like Baroque, so that's not something you really ever had to deal with, was it?
Yeah, I guess not really. But a lot of the times, people in the town would like get upset and be like, "Oh, you should be doing this. You should be doing that." And I would always just, I don't know, I was just doing what I was told from my boss, and I'm not taking orders from random civilians, but I would just sit there.
Say that you're talking about the city of Baroque.
Yeah.
When you're, I didn't realize that. I never heard you say anything like where the citizens, because you were working for essentially a city, a town, township, doing the road construction or whatever it might be with the maintenance of the town. I didn't realize that residents would come up to you like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a small town, so they felt they could approach you and just have conversation or whatnot, I guess. So,
because as you say that about one of the things that I was always very, very scared of was like door-to-door sales or really any type of sales. And I think one of the reasons for that was the way that Dad actually used to answer the phone whenever somebody who was selling something would call. It would just be his response hello, what do you want? You know what I mean? And I'm like, holy cow, like, I don't want to bother somebody. It was just like that response that you would sit there and watch him talk. I was like, holy cow, like, does everybody answer the phone like that? Because my dad has given me a great example of how every time he answers the phone from somebody who he doesn't know, it would just be like, and then sometimes he just wouldn't recognize the number and it would be like, oh yeah, hey, hey, what's up? What's up? What's up, Keith? And it was just holy cow, dude. It just like, I was over there shivering in my boots just for that person on the other line. You know what I mean? Because he would just bust, you know, just bust on them so bad. And I was like, oh, like, and then, I've, you know, I'd talk to people like, oh, yes, door-to-door sales is nothing. And I was like, yeah, right, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you see with the worst case scenario. So it's like, oh, man. And that's all you see, especially if dad's answering the phone to like a bunch of scam calls or something like that.
Right. Or just like last week, we were talking about how he would like somebody who was coming in to purchase from his business, his place of employment. Yeah. How many? Here's your menus. Smoking, or it's just like, dude, like, holy cow, dude, like, can you be any more like demeaning to these people who are just coming in here and want to enjoy a meal? They're your customers, dude. Like, hey, how are you guys? Like, it was just like, holy cow.
Yeah, just to seeing the worst case scenario over and over, it just builds in that fear of, oh my gosh, this is what it all must be like.
100%, dude. And that was a trauma that I had. And I think I, you know, it's something that I've really had to work hard on overcoming, is this ability to where I don't think I'm bothering people, whether it's just approaching people at the gym or trying to make friends, because that's one thing that's always been in the back of my mind. And I would say this is probably a fear, is I don't like bothering people. I really don't like bothering people. But once you get out in the real world and you start realizing that the one way to progress in the life, to be successful, to make friends, is by having really good communication, that you have to talk to people. And sometimes the people may be having a bad day, or they may be in a bad mood, and that one response that you have with them may seem really bad. It's like, I'm never going to talk to this person again. It's the accumulation of how many times you talk to them and how many times they respond in a negative way. Now, if it's somebody who just responds that way every single time, okay, I've realized after 10 times, this person has always had a bad response to me, so I'm just never going to talk to them again. But it's that mindset where, for me, being an overthinker as well, I'm always thinking of like, oh, that didn't go well, or they must be really mad at me, or they must hate me. And it's like, no, they're just having a bad day, just like I have a bad day. And so that was just one response. So I'm going to keep trying. And then if it's you know, it's just like your batting average, right? So the more hits you get, the better you are. But you have to give it more opportunities than just one.
Yeah. You have to have more at-bats to get more hits. And if you don't take the at-bats, then you're never going to get any more hits.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, the one thing is, you have, you know, in order to really learn and to progress, you have to make mistakes. And me being a people pleaser, that's one thing that I've always been really afraid of, is making mistakes. My perfectionist mentality, I would say I don't like making mistakes. And that is a fear that I have. It's like, oh, if I make a mistake, will I get fired? Like, you know, and in most instances, if you're just making the normal mistakes for your business, that you're trying something, you didn't know the answer, and you tried and you made a mistake and it didn't damage the business, you know, drastically, it's like, you're not going to ever really get fired unless you're doing something just so, you know,
off the wall.
Yeah. Like, not showing up for work every single day, drinking on the job, you know, physical violence, some type of, you know, a number of other things, but
I always thought that something that was very interesting about fears is exposure therapy being one of like the best ways to get over something. And I guess that's more so with fears that are that you can use exposure therapy, I guess I'm thinking about it. I don't know any that wouldn't, but just like, for example, speaking in front of people, if you're scared of speaking in front of people, then you have to go speak in front of people to get over that fear. You're never going to get over that fear by not doing it. Or if you're scared of snakes or something, the only way to get over that is go hold snakes or go be around snakes or whatever, you know?
I agree with that to some point, but the issue is if you have a fear of public speaking and you're going to just go speak in front of people and you're not 100% prepared on what it is you're going to say, or you're going to like talk baseball to a bunch of scientists,
right,
and your topic isn't like geared towards them, you're going to be able to tell the energy of the room and how that goes. And I don't personally think that's going to be super helpful, because it has to be appealing to the people you're speaking to. And I mean, have you tried exposure therapy? Have you done that with any of your fears?
No, I guess not necessarily, other than no.
Okay. Because no. I was going to say, what's that, probably been 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, I was pretty darn afraid of snakes, and that I went down to a place down in Kendall, just south of Miami, and they had this big old python that they kind of just like put up around my.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was. But, you know, I don't know if it worked or not. I was pretty dang afraid of that thing, yeah. But I don't have as big a fear of snakes anymore. And I'm not sure if it was just because of that occurrence not being bad, to where the snake didn't kill me. It didn't really do anything bad to me. And so my fear wasn't really of snakes. I think my fear is of concern of what a snake could do to me. And I think, you know, you go back to maybe the Adam and Eve story, to where it's a serpent, and, or just, you know, you see all these things where people getting bit by snakes and it kills them or it wraps around them. And I think there's so many times where snakes have been perpetuated in a bad light, to where, and I think it's the same way with sharks. It's like, do you realize how many sharks are swimming out there in the ocean and how many times they go by people and there's no shark attack?
Yeah.
You know, or, and so it's just those types of things. Because I know people who are afraid of spiders. And for me, maybe I just haven't watched enough scary spider movies to realize how scary they are. But it's never been something I really have been super afraid of. Now, I don't really want them all over me or anything. I'll you flick them off. But I'm not afraid to go up and like try to smack it or you know,
get rid of it. I think one of the main things that you said with snakes is you weren't necessarily scared of the snakes. But I think for me, I'm scared of snakes too, kind of, I guess. But I'm not necessarily scared of snakes. I'm just scared of wild animals because of the capabilities that they have and your inability to predict what they're going to do, I guess.
But wouldn't that be the case with any animal that isn't your pet?
Yeah, I guess that's true. But some are more domesticated, so it's, I guess, more so predictable rather than just like a wild lion or something like that.
Yeah, no, 100% I agree. I just know that there's, you know, certain breeds of dogs that just aren't as acceptable in terms of their aggressiveness and stuff like that,
right?
And so if you don't know who the owner is or how the owner has kind of raised that dog, it's essentially could be a wild animal. So sometimes it's amazing how our minds try to explain these things in our system to not be afraid of something while we're afraid of other something else.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time it doesn't even necessarily have to make sense. Like, fears can be so, like airplanes, for instance. People are scared of flying, even though it's statistically a very safe option of travel. It's a lot safer than traveling through the sea by a boat or something like that, or just even by driving via car. And there's less plane crashes per flights taken over. It doesn't have to make sense. It's just irrational fears happen. And it doesn't matter how many statistics you show these people, like, hey, this plane has a 0.001% chance of crashing. And they're like, oh, I don't care. But there's still that 0.001%, and that's all I'm going to think about when I'm up there in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess you don't mind flying, is that correct?
No, I don't mind flying. There's been a couple of times where turbulence has freaked me out a little bit, but...
Yeah, I don't like flying. I don't care for it. Whenever I get up in the air and I get to be above a certain level, I start getting headaches. My ears pop.
Oh yeah.
I don't like being crammed in a plane. I like being able to walk up and down the aisle. And I've started realizing, to be able to label some of my fears, is I don't really, a lot of the things I'm afraid of are things that I have absolutely no control over.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right. There's really good statistics on how safe it is to fly in a plane and stuff like that. But I'm not the one that ever has control of that plane. Yeah. And so I have to believe and trust in that person. And maybe this is a bigger trust issue where I just don't trust people. I'm struggling with trust issues possibly. So I have to care more about that. But again, like skydiving, that's not something I really want to do. I don't know if that is a fear or not, but it's just like I just don't see the benefits of doing it. It doesn't seem exhilarating to me. It seems like scary. I don't really want to die, and so why would I test the opportunity to die? Like, it's just like I could just stay on land, and for those 25 minutes I have a better chance of staying alive than falling out of a plane, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of made me think about the black swan hypothesis a little bit more. It's like, if your goal is to live as long as possible and live the best life you possibly can, don't go skydiving, because there's not a guarantee that you're going to have a skydiving accident or whatever, but that just raises the chance of you having a skydiving accident and you dying, or you being physically permanently paralyzed or whatnot. And so if you want to have a good life, then you don't go skydiving.
It's just 100%. And that, I think that was one of the things that none of us kids really ever grew up playing football, because I think mom and dad were fearful more so of a sport that was a contact sport, to where all it really took was one wrong move or a concussion or anything like that that can just, you know, hurt you. And I guess I've never really liked football. I don't like boxing. I don't really like MMA or anything where I get hit in the face. I don't like getting hit in the face at all.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
It just I don't like it.
Yeah.
I remember I tried doing it for, it was probably 3 or 4 months, and it was going along good. And I said, listen, I will do this, but I don't want to do any sparring, and I do not want to get hit in the face. And I got hit in the face once, where somebody who's just kind of being a jerk, he did it. And I was like, that was my last day there. I didn't want to get hit in the face. I told you I didn't want to get hit in the face. I got hit in the face, and now I'm done.
Yeah. For football, I remember there was actually a time in middle school where I asked mom if I could play football, and she was like, let me think about it. And I was like excited, because the people in my class were going to play football for the middle school or whatever, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go play football. And then mom was like, yeah, no, I don't think it's best if you play football. And I was so upset about it, but looking back at it, it's like, man, she was really doing me a favor, because just all the people with CTE from football and all these concussions, and you just don't realize how much it can affect you later in life, all of that brain trauma.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I never really... When you say CTE, what do you mean by that?
like a lot of NFL players just have... Do you know what CTE is?
No, I thought CTE was like building trades or something like that in school.
Oh, yeah. I guess that might be it as well. But CTE is like when you have a lot of brain trauma, it starts to like deteriorate your brain, and your brain function is a lot worse. I guess I don't know the technical term for it, but like Brett Favre has it from all the concussions and all the hits that he takes. Like, I think he said he was getting like concussions every day or something like that.
Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah. Okay. No, I don't. But now that you bring it up, I remember the South Park where it's they created that game, Sarcastaball.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Well, they go and try to be as nice as they possibly can to the other team, and whoever is the nicest wins. Like, Butters was like the best player. But yeah, you had all the NFL players like going up for like their Hall of Fame speech, and they were like all just, they made fun of them. They were all walking around different directions, not knowing where they're going.
Yeah.
And everything like that, which is, it's not funny, but no, yeah, I completely. So in terms of fears, like, are you, do you have any fears that you want to share, or maybe some fears that you had that you no longer have?
I think most of my fears are more like psychological, I guess. Like, I'm scared of getting dementia when I'm older. I think that would be like worst case scenario. Like,
that's interesting.
I don't know.
Where do you think that comes from?
I don't know. It's just, you hear all these stories of like people's parents or people's grandparents getting dementia, and then them not remembering who they are, or I guess maybe it started when dad, maybe not started, but solidified when the last couple days dad was alive. And I remember the last time that I saw him, he didn't remember who I was. And that just, I don't know, dude, that just kind of destroyed me.
Wow. I didn't realize that, man.
Yeah, because the day before he passed, when we were all leaving, we were all kind of like, when I was leaving, at least, I was just kind of giving him a hug and giving him a little speech kind of thing. Not like a speech, but I was just saying goodbye to him for the day. And I told him, I was like, I promise I'm going to be back tomorrow and I'm going to see you again. And we're going to have a conversation tomorrow morning. And then I walked out of the room and I waited for everybody else to, I was just waiting by the elevator for everybody else to come out after they said their goodbyes or whatever. And I remember I went back in one more time to say something that, I don't know, I guess I didn't want to regret not saying. And I went back in there and he was like, who are you? Who are you? And I told him, I was like, I'm your son. I'm Jake. You don't remember me? He's like, who are you? And I just kind of started bawling my eyes out and ran out.
Hmm.
Yeah. It was,
wow,
it was rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess
that's an interesting experience.
Yeah, I guess maybe it comes from that and just, okay. I don't know, I don't want to, that feeling of not remembering where you are or who your loved ones are and then snapping back to the reality of I didn't remember who they are, but I do now. I don't know. It's just kind of like a weird psychological thing to me. And I guess it's just probably one of my biggest fears.
Right. But, and this is interesting with dementia, right? So you're talking about a fear of not being able to remember in the future. However, if you get to the point where you have dementia, you're not going to realize you have dementia.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're not able to memorize it. And so it's like that specific fear, it's like, it's a scary thought. And it's some of these things, it's like, how long are we going to allow these things to ruminate over our lives mm-hmm. and cause us to think about these things until what age? Because so I have a very similar fear. Well, I used to, and it was getting rheumatoid arthritis. So it was mm-hmm. the exact same disease that dad had. That was a huge fear of mine. And because I was like, you know, is this hereditary? Is this something that I'm going to get? And it's like, if I get it, like, how, what am I get? What type of father am I going to be to my kids? Or, you know, what's my wife going to think of me? Or those types of things. And those, like, that really, I just allowed those things. And I was like, you know what? If I get it, there's nothing I can do about it. But right now, what I can do is properly take care of my body with fitness and health and nutrition to the best of my possible ability to be able to negate all of these things from hopefully happening in the future. And if I do the best of my ability and it still happens, then me worrying about it for all these times did absolutely nothing. But however, it took away from all of my enjoyable moments that I would have had mm-hmm. when I was actually healthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I guess for me, thinking about it is not necessarily the fear of getting dementia, because if you get dementia, you obviously don't realize you have dementia. So it's not, I don't know. But my fear is that I get dementia and then it goes on for so long and then I don't know, I guess I stop having dementia or something and then I remember what everything is and then I realize how much of my life I don't remember because of it. I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing, but yeah, I think I have a fear of getting rheumatoid arthritis too, because I don't know, just when it gets cold out, you just look for stuff. It's like, oh, dad had it. It might be hereditary. So when it gets cold out, is this what it was like for him when he had rheumatoid arthritis when it got cold out? Did his hands feel like this or that? And you just start nitpicking every little thing. And I think you saying that doing your best to prevent it is the best case scenario, because even with dementia, I think there have been studies that link it to like sugar consumption or just bad nutritional
100% nutritional
health in the first place and just causing yes. your brain to deteriorate over time. So it's yes. preventable, but yeah.
And I think oftentimes it's what we allow ourselves to consume. Like, are you sitting in front of a TV just consuming material to where your brain isn't actually being creative and coming up? And that's one thing that I actually appreciate you about you so much is that you're always trying to learn new stuff. And for me, I haven't had a TV in years. So when I come home, it's either reading a book or listening to some type of YouTube video learning or something like that, to where I'm always trying to keep my brain active, not so much because fear of dementia, but because I just absolutely love learning. And going back to what you were saying about dementia, I think that it also has to do not so much with you not wanting to forget your life or anything like that, but I think it has to do with, you know, how much that hurt you when you had that response from dad, and you don't want to do that to anyone, any of your loved ones. And I think it's that right there, is that even though that hurt, it's not something that dad did intentionally. And I can only imagine all the stuff that he was hooked up on and taking at that point in time too. It was where, you know, it wasn't him like forgetting those things.
Yeah, it wasn't even necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily call it dementia. It was just hospice is just basically put him on as many medications as possible just to make sure that he doesn't have a bad experience, like pain-wise. I understood that at the time, but it was just still really hard for me.
100%. Yeah, dude. When stuff like that, something special like that happens, it's going to hurt. And it's normal for us to hurt about those types of things. I know for me, a couple other ones, like, again, I've dealt with some very difficult things. I think dad's passing and some other things that I've dealt with in the past couple of years have made this extremely difficult, to where a lot of my fears have actually subsided when you lose something so special. And I think you go through such a difficult time that sometimes you realize that the things that are scary, if you deal with them and you go through them, the other things that you thought were scary aren't really all that scary because you went through some tough crap in other areas of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, like, death was something that I was always, I just never wanted to die. I don't want to get old, but it's like, you know what? Like, I saw a dad pass away. I've had people choose to not be in my life anymore, and they're still alive. And so when you have people not really maybe accepting you or putting you out of your life, that hurts really, really bad. But what you start realizing is that all I have is today, and so I need to make the best of today that I can possibly do and progress forward, instead of ruminating on the possibility of me dying at an early age or having someone go out of my life that I can no longer control. Those things are really difficult and they're sad, but death is no longer that big of an issue because I have today to go enjoy life. And someday, yeah, I will die. But I got to go and enjoy each day that I have, which is also difficult because, right, we have all these things that we have to do. We have to make money. We have to provide for our family. We have to, you know, live a life. But it's about going on and progressing in life too.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard a quote recently that put it into perspective, and it was, if you never died, then it would be a lot worse off than actually if you did die. Because if you never died, then all of the things that you cared about, all of the things that you want to do, all the things that inspire you, you can just put it off until tomorrow. Whereas you know for a fact you are one day going to die. So what's stopping you from right now doing everything that you want to do? Because tomorrow is not necessarily guaranteed. So it kind of gives you inspiration to actually be better and do all the things that you want to do, because you don't know when that last day is. It could be tomorrow. It could be 10 years from now. It could be when you're 90 years old.
Yeah, no regrets, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I speak out to any of the kids listening. If there's certain goals that you want to do that you can only do at a young age, like playing sports, give it your all right now when you have the time. Like, there's other things, playing video games, whatever it is that might be there for an opportunity, but those things are going to be there later. And I know everybody says this to you, but you have only certain things that you can do right now and continue to do in the next few years that you can make the most of right now. And like, that's how it is for me, is trying to make the most out of what I have right now so I don't have any regrets in the future.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking out for your future self right now, even if it's harder for yourself in the present, it'll pay off itself in the future. And I think that's important. You need to look into your future self and not be selfish and just, what do I crave right now? Whereas what do I want to be in the future? Who do I want to be in the future? What do I want to set myself up for?
Yeah, like I know right now my present self is receiving a lot of the benefits that my past self set up for the future to be able to enjoy. Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, I stopped drinking alcohol. I haven't drank alcohol. Well, I think I've had it two or three times in the last 2 years. I drink 2 gallons of water every single day. I go to the gym 6 days a week, at least 2 hours a day. And then this, when was it, January 1st or early last year, I decided to give up hard sugars. And so what I call hard sugars are anything that are loaded in candy, your cookies. For my birthday, I had key lime pie. I gave myself a 1 day pass yeah. for that. But dude, in my 40s, you'd be amazed at how much better I feel with my joints and my inflammation. Like, I have absolutely nothing, Jake. I think even I feel better in 40 than I felt at like 26 and 27 because of all the nutrients that my body has. I don't have like the fat. I'm not carrying any extra weight or anything like that. My muscles feel solid. My joints feel great. And it just amazes me like how good I feel, even though in that present time back then, that sugar tasted so good. And love, you know how you can like sit and you can taste it like, and then you want it. And mm-hmm. now when I sit here and I think about my food, like if I see like a cookie or something, it is something inside of me. My taste buds have pushed it down to where my gut starts like understanding the benefit or how it would feel after yeah. I ate the cookie, to where I have that stomach ache or
to where it makes you not want to eat it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. 100%, dude.
I used to do that to myself, not necessarily on purpose, but just whenever anybody offered chocolate, I'd be like, oh, no, I don't like chocolate. I don't like chocolate. So I never ate chocolate. Like I never really ate chocolate unless it was in a cookie or something like that every once in a while. And then, I started eating chocolate and I was like, oh my God, I love chocolate. And then but for the longest time, I genuinely didn't like chocolate. I think just because I told myself over and over, I don't like chocolate. I don't like chocolate. I don't know, but.
And when was that you used to tell yourself you didn't like chocolate?
I think my early high school years, I would just be like, I don't like chocolate. I don't like chocolate. Maybe it was just me trying to be a little bit different than everybody. I don't like chocolate. Chocolate sucks.
When you were a little kid, there used to be specific treats that you used to like to eat, weren't there?
Oh, yeah. Maybe not necessarily when I was a little kid, but just like, I guess my high school years.
What did you like to eat?
Oh, I liked everything. I would tell myself that I didn't like chocolate.
Okay.
I liked to eat it.
Okay. Just, yeah, I remember like chips, right?
Oh yeah, I liked to eat chips a lot. Hot Pockets. I loved to eat Hot Pockets.
So I guess going back a little bit to the fears, one of the other fears that I used to have, and I don't know if you know this about me, but I think I have something called social anxiety. Okay. I have anxiety. It's subsided quite a bit. As of recently, I'm continuing to work on it. But one thing that always kind of scared me was crowded spaces. And I would always put like an active shooter scenario in my head. Oh. So like baseball games, sometimes crowded gyms. Like whenever I would enter a building, and I still do this sometimes, it's just not as heightened to where when I'm sitting down at a restaurant or a table or at a crowd, I can actually have a conversation with people instead of being so distracted by everything else going on. To where I was always looking to see where the closest exit was if something were to happen. So I was always planning out like the worst case scenario and trying to create a plan for that. And sometimes there would just be certain triggers that could happen. Maybe people yelling or screaming or talking loudly or swearing. Mm-hmm. And if I heard aggression and those types of things could be like these like triggers to where it's like, oh, is it gonna happen now? And that was just something that I remember dealing with a lot.
Yeah, I can see that too. But yeah, just your brain picks up on those things and it's like, okay, well, this thing, every time the worst case scenario happens, it starts with this. So every time this happens, it's going to lead, your brain says it's going to escalate to this and this and that. And I get that. The social setting is, I think a couple months ago, we were out at a dance club and there was loud music and people were just sitting there dancing and I got that, and it was, I got that scenario, and I was just thinking, okay, what's going on? What's going on? Where's the exits? What's going on here? And I just felt like the urge to leave, but we stayed for a little bit, and then I was like, okay, yeah, I think we should. I don't know. I'm just getting a feeling that I think we should leave, and then I think I didn't really think much of it, but then a couple weeks ago, I went fishing with my wife's brother, and I think he said that night that we were there after we'd left. I think there was a big fight that broke out or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So my the social anxiety, it's also there's also something called high functioning anxiety, and so that's something I'm just a very overthinking. Like I'm a perfectionist as it is, so I'm always overthinking. Sometimes the worst case scenario, or like for this week, oh, this has to get done, this has to get done, this has to get done, and all of these things. And so I've really tried to settle my mind because that anxiety can also bring a lot about a lot of fear. And also, I think you know, trying to tell someone who has anxiety that they have anxiety
isn't yeah, really that just the best makes course it worse. Of action.
Yeah, I remember like I was like, dude, I don't have anxiety. Do I have anxiety? And then it's just like, oh crap. Like, that's a now we're going down this bunny hill where I'm talking back and forth in my head for the last 2 hours. And the people who told me that don't realize it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. That's like one of the worst feelings when people don't realize you like you're in a social setting and you're just having that mental discussion with yourself of like, oh my gosh, do I have anxiety? Do I have anxiety? And then you just keep going back and forth with yourself. And yeah, I get that. And I didn't really used to get that, but I remember one of the times I went to one of the dad's doctor's appointments or something, and somebody came into the emergency room because they were having a panic attack or something, and they were super scared of needles, and they could not do needles, and I think that forced them to have a panic attack or something like that. And meanwhile, I didn't really understand it at the time, because in front of me, dad was taking all of these medications or whatnot, or I saw how much pain that he was in, and he had his straight face on as ever and no sounds, no complaints, no nothing. And then this person comes in and they're scared to take a needle, and I didn't really understand it at the time, but mental battles are so, it's very stressful, and the anxiety you get from those is super powerful. And I didn't understand it at the time, but I do now. And yeah, just going out in a social setting and having that conversation in your head while you're not completely there, present in that situation, it can be like one of the worst feelings.
Well, and it's not only in a social setting, right? So sometimes even for me, it's called high functioning anxiety. So it could be at any point in time. And it's often, you know, it used to be a lot more than it is. I've really, breathe in and help it. But just sometimes when you're alone, that loneliness is like, how long am I going to be alone? Like, is this forever? And you sit and you just keep going off onto that bunny trail. It's like, dude, I could create so many movies in a quick amount of time, be all the stories I tell myself in my head. Because of how that goes. And it's the same way, like trying to, you know, telling someone who has depression or they're sad that they have depression, it's just like, dude, you don't tell people. Like I personally wouldn't tell someone that. I would say, oh, you're happy. You know what I mean? I wouldn't, I wouldn't just say that, because it's just, I guess I wouldn't say you're happy, but it's just like, dude, you tell somebody like that, it's like, what do you think that is going to do? It's like, you have such and such disease, so now we're going to give you this medication to be able to deal with that disease. It's like, oh, I have a disease, like, but I'm this. It's like, what if, you know, wouldn't it be better to not tell them that they have that and to try to deal with it? However, maybe it is medication or whatever, but like, it just seems like that's a really bad idea.
Yeah.
It'd be like, oh, like somebody who's trying to get better at baseball, and you just say, well, you just suck at baseball. It's like, yeah, that's not super helpful.
Yeah. There's a lot of the fake it till you make it is, it sounds stupid, but sometimes it actually just works. Just like the placebo effect in general, it's interesting how it works. Like you go to the doctor and they prescribe you this pill, like your stomach's not feeling good, or you have migraines or something, and they prescribe you this prescription, but it's actually a placebo, but you don't know that, and it actually ends up working. And it's just the mind telling itself like, oh, we're taking medication, so the next step is we're going to get better, so eventually it just gets better. And I think with ADHD and a lot of the kids nowadays and prescribing Ritalin or Adderall or whatever they even prescribe them now, is telling them that they have ADHD and then prescribing it. So then, I mean, that kid just says, oh, I have ADHD. This is normal. I'm just not off my medication. So that's why I'm acting like this. Whereas just not sitting them down in front of a screen all day, and then maybe they get that energy out, and maybe it's not even ADHD. It's just because they're a kid. Their attention span is, I mean, they're just a kid.
No, yeah, I get that. It's this outlet, or it's not really an outlet. It's this excuse, like giving someone an out. Like, I have an excuse. Like, I've had people that I've talked to that get angry or defensive and stuff like that. It's like, oh, well, that's my sign. It's like your zodiac sign. It's like, oh, well, I've read books where it says you can't really deal with anything after 7. It's like, well, are you trying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, are you trying to do that? It's like, because it's affecting me, and like, it doesn't feel good if you're, you know, yelling at me or speaking to me this terms. But it's like, they're not trying anything. It's just, that's their excuse. Like, oh, I'm a whatever sign this is, or
I
that's how I grew up. It's like, okay, yeah, I get that's how you grew up. Are you gonna be a big boy at any point in time, or is it just continue to be, you know, little kid, and that's how you always respond? You have no emotional awareness. You're not going to work on your emotional intelligence. It's just not something you're willing to do, or what? Like, come on, man.
Yeah, I think it's important to not set up those things to fall back on and just use them as an excuse, because if you have an excuse, you're going to use it. And I think it's just important to not give yourself those excuses to fall back on in the first place. Like, oh yeah, I was raised this way, so this is how I am. It's like, okay, well, you were raised that way. What are you doing to make it better?
You're 100% right. And I think that's oftentimes what we do when we have fears. Instead of trying to face those fears or developing a plan of how we can overcome those fears, it's just like, oh, well, this is a fear. I'm stuck with it for the rest of my life. There's nothing I can really do about it. And so this is what it is. This is who I am. Like, I have a fear of confrontation. Like, I'm just never going to confront anybody. And I hope that things don't, you know what I mean? It's just like, man, like, you gotta do those things. And so I guess now for me, some of my fears, I guess my biggest one that I've really struggled with, and I think one of the nice things about this podcast where it's helped with that, is not finding purpose in life. Like, I really want to have purpose in life. I want to be able to impact people. For me, it's also, you know, I have a fear of not having kids. That's a really big one, because I want to be able to teach them. I want to be able to laugh and play. And so that's something that kind of sits deep within me. But having purpose in life, I don't want to live a lackluster life to where I don't feel like I had a purpose, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important to have just that feeling of having a purpose. And I think it's an idea to just, some people want to have a legacy. They want to leave behind a legacy. But I think it's just, sometimes your purpose is not necessarily so in one area, you know? Like, if your purpose isn't to, I'm not necessarily saying necessarily for you, but some people just don't have kids. It's like, okay, what do you do with that extra time, that extra money, that extra love that you have to give to the world now that you don't have kids? How are you going to use that and distribute it to the world as if you did have kids? And that way you still have a purpose, in a sense, even though necessarily the end result isn't the same. It's, you're still putting your voice out there, you're impacting people's lives, you're benefiting other people. I think at the end of the day, the most important thing is, how are you making your life better? How are you making everybody else's life around you better?
Yeah, and I think this kind of goes back to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago about, you know, what your dreams and goals are. And, you know, my purpose, each and every day, I'm trying to laugh more. I'm trying to learn more. Mm-hmm. Laughter is a big thing. I'm really trying to do that, because sometimes you can get, you know, just in a bad mindset. It's like, oh, I don't like doing this, or you're just, everything's bad, everything's whoa, blah, blah. But it's like, so many things, it's so easy to laugh about things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so easy to try to create that. And then, you know, going like with the fears, being alone is a big fear of mine too. You know what I mean? Like, being alone, also getting fired from a job. Let's see, last year I got fired from a job, and I'd never gotten fired ever before in my life. And that was something that I'd always been scared of doing, which I don't really know why. I've always been a high performing individual, but I was working for a company that did sales for personal training certifications over the phone. And what really was difficult, dude, is that I was making more calls than anyone else. Like, I got the record for most calls made last December for the company that anyone had ever done before. Mm-hmm. And so they hired me during the Thanksgiving holiday, Christmas, and there were so many people to where I just wasn't making the sales. And it was like, okay, you're not getting the numbers, so you're done. And I was like, holy cow, dude. It's like, it would be like, you know, you going out to practice baseball or trying to do the best you possibly know how, mm-hmm. and somebody just saying, yeah, sorry, you're done. And it's like, it's one thing from a baseball team, but it's another thing when it's like your whole livelihood of how you make money, how you try to like pay rent, how these things get done. It's like, you're just done. It's like, that was really hard, dude.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Being in this, the sales industry in general is sometimes people, it, the clientele, the people that you have just depends. Sometimes they're going to be in a good mood. Some days they're going to be in a bad mood. I guess you can influence that and sway it in certain ways, but sometimes you're going to get those calls where no matter what, like if you were going to call dad, there is 0% chance you're swaying his opinion on anything that he doesn't already know. And just
unless it was something that he didn't know, like about Donald Trump or about some type of the flat earth or something like that, and you were going to be able to sell him something maybe towards that, but
or I remember those TV commercials. You remember the ShamWows? He would he would always buy into those, and Josh always called them the ShamWotes or something like that.
ShamWotes.
That's
right. I think that was the very first thing that he ever bought off of an infomercial was a ShamWow. Like, have you seen what they do? Like, these are incredible.
Yeah, I don't actually know if he ever used one, though.
I mean, we had him around. I think they would use them, like, mainly to, like, drive the cars after.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting because that fear of getting fired, it's totally 100% out of my control. Now, well, it's not 100% out of my control. Like, if I don't show up to work for 2 weeks straight, I'm probably going to get fired. But when you try to perform to the best of your ability and you try to do your best, and sometimes you just like, it's just like, you know, not being able to play a professional sport if you really want to get to, like, there's just some things that are completely 100% out of your control. And so being fearful of those things is just more detrimental. It's just super detrimental, I guess.
Yeah. Like we said, just the irrational fears, not necessarily the ones that you can control and make yourself less afraid of by some way, but just the fears that no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to control the outcome. I feel like those are probably the worst ones to have because you just see yourself not being able to improve your view of it. And at the end of the day, you're still afraid of it and you're spending all this time being afraid of it. And no benefit is coming from it.
Yeah, and so, correct. Yeah, if there's no benefit coming from it, it's like, what's the point, right?
Right.
And for me, I guess the last two is even, you know, being scared of how people would judge this podcast the same way that I was afraid of the clothing line, which didn't end up being successful. But like this podcast, I've caught myself in previous episodes being like, okay, what do I say next? What do I say now? What do I say? And what work people gonna like? Like, what can we come up with so that they'll actually like and they're listening to it? And then I'll listen to it. It's like, how could I have done a better job there? And I was like, no, the best thing that I can do is just have an engaging conversation back and forth with you because this is the time that I really enjoy the most. And as long as we stay on topic and we really try to cover issues and enjoy our conversation back and forth, that's what this podcast is all about. So why am I putting this pressure on myself? Now, obviously, I want it to be good, and I'm trying to do this best as possible to be prepared for the podcast through the week. But putting that pressure on myself during the podcast and hoping people will like it and stuff like that, it's just like how much effort am I going to spend like just not enjoying stuff and being fearful?
Yeah. And then I think sometimes if you try to cater that way and try to think ahead of time, like, what are people going to like? What should I do instead of what I would normally do? I think it takes away from the experience a lot of the time. Whereas just being a genuine person and being your true self, I feel like that's a huge draw. And people, they can gauge that and see the sincerity. And it makes it a lot more interesting, a lot more personable, and I think just being yourself makes the product all around better.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that's one of the reasons that Joe Rogan's podcast has been so popular, is because it's not like they're talking about a specific topic. I think after the podcast is over, just like you do for our podcast, where you write down, you know, what was discussed and everything like that, and he covers the topic, but he sits there and they just have a genuine conversation back and forth. If there's something that seems interesting to him and he wants to go a little deeper, he starts asking questions about that. And sometimes they just start just coming up with jokes, like, you know, on top, and they start making fun of each other or whatever, and going back back and forth with that. And it's just like, what was it? Chris Voss, who what I thought you were going to say with the Black Swan, he wrote a book called Never Split the Difference. He was a hostage negotiator. He had a video this week where he was talking about the Hawk Tua girl. You know what that, you know who she is?
I've heard of it, and I can assume, but...
So she made a video, and she kind of got famous, and he was saying, the world is so depleted of enjoyment, and we're so bound with stress. And I don't remember everything he said, but essentially the premise was is that any opportunity that we have to laugh or have some type of memorable moment, if you can create that in other people, like, you're going to get recognition for it. And so that's what it was. It was like her 15 seconds of fame where it was funny. People thought it was funny. And it was like, wow, this makes me feel good. It was like that. It made a lot of people feel good because they were laughing about something.
Yeah. That's another thing with stand-up comedy, like that Kill Tony podcast that I told you about. It's basically you get 1 minute to do stand-up comedy. He pulls a bunch of random people out of a literal bucket. They have their names written on a piece of paper. And he calls them up to the stage. They get 1 minute. And then after their 1 minute's over, he basically just interviews them. And sometimes he just basically roasts them. And then sometimes he gives them genuine advice. And a lot of the time, the most common advice that he gives people in the interview is he finds out what those people are actually like in their personal lives. And he's like, why are you not doing this type of stuff in your set? Like, people laugh at what is genuine because it's relatable. And some people have those experiences that you have because we're all people. We go through those experiences. What you are genuine about is funny because that's real.
No, 100%. I know for some of my comedy sets that I had created that I want to do, one of them was like Dad being a host at Savory, because it's like those are things that are part of me. Another one I was thinking about, you know, if I actually was honest like about, you know, the people that came in on tours, and like how I would actually talk to them, how I would talk to like you guys, and how I would be funny, and the jokes that I would say, where, you know, I'm representing a business, so I have to be a little bit more professional. And this is where the gym is. It's open 24 hours. And instead of where you guys be like, yeah, this is the gym, and there's going to be hot girls here, usually from 2 to 3 p.m. Where like I'm gonna be more relaxed and I'm gonna be more funny about it, and like, oh, at the pool there's a really hot chick that comes over here usually 7 o'clock every single night, nice bikini, like, you know, those types of things where it's gonna be a lot funnier. But it's me, it's who I am, and it's like, that's the one thing with comedy that bothers me a little bit, is that people have gotten away from trying to personalize it for their own lives, and they've just started trying to point the finger and making fun of other people or other things and being vulgar. And it's like, it's really not that funny. Like, it's just not.
Yeah. I think the main focus is to just make jokes about what stands out in your daily life. Like, if you go to the grocery store and you see this thing, it's like, talk about that. Talk about your experience and what you think about that, because other people are experiencing that thing too, and they probably think the same thing that you do. Like, what the hell is going on over there? And you make up some funny, innovative way, not innovative way, but like, just put a different perspective on it. And people like real life talk because it's relatable, and people like being able to relate and to laugh at things that they're like, hey, I understand that. I've been in that situation. So
100%, because we're always, you know, in these, we all have all of these same normal life experiences that happen to us. It's just, we can make fun of so many, we can make fun of them in so many different ways, because we all have these thoughts that are going on in our heads and everything. There's just so much to make fun of.
Yeah. And then another thing you'll hear a bunch of famous stand-up comedians talk about is like private shows for like super rich people or corporations or things like that. And they talk about how they're the worst gigs ever because the people are basically around a bunch of their coworkers, so they don't want to laugh at maybe the things that they actually think are funny. So it ends up just nobody laughing at anything. So the comedian just gives a worse performance because it's like, why is nobody laughing? But then you realize nobody wants to laugh because they're like, they don't want to go to work on Monday and be like, oh, did you see Bill laughing at that one joke? Like, that was kind of horrible, wasn't it? And
right. Yeah. It's fear of being judged, right? Yeah,
exactly.
All going back to fear. Like, I think sometimes comedians, they're fearful of going out of their comfort zone and talking about their own experiences because it's like, dude, this guy actually did this. Cause I wrote a little bit of a bit of what it's like to like live alone. Mm. And like one of the things I'm most proud of myself is that after 6 months of being, you know, living alone is that I've only ran out of toilet paper twice. But it's like those types of things, man. It's like, yeah, that, you know, if I share that with people, like, okay, they're going to like, you know, make fun of me a little bit, but it's like, hey, it's funny, right?
Yeah, and people understand it because that's the human experience, and it's something that happens to everybody.
Right, 100%.
Yeah.
So going back onto fears, do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about, and any other, I guess, topics or anything?
Not necessarily. I guess it was just, I don't know. I'm fascinated by, like I was saying earlier, by people's perspectives and how everybody's scared of different things and how somebody can be scared of snakes. And then there's people that make literal careers off of like snake wranglers or whatever you call them, or people that go down to the Everglades and they try to catch these pythons. And it's like, I could never do that. And just, I don't know, seeing how literally everybody's different, even though you see all the little differences, but then you see how similar we all are and we're living the same life, but we're living a different life. And I don't know, I'm kind of rambling at this point, but it's just, I'm fascinated by the human experience, I guess.
Yeah, by the human psyche. And so, mm-hmm. you know, that's very interesting. It's not a topic that we hit this podcast, but I think oftentimes as child, the things that our parents are afraid of, and if we hear them like maybe, you know, scared, or you sense that fear in them. Like I know mom, for example, used to be very, very scared of thunder and lightning and just storms. It was like whenever there was a storm, it was like we were almost always headed for the basement. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and it was. And I'm like, I think at one point she did like see a tornado. And so that was fearful for her. But it was just like that was something inside of me that I had to really kind of deal with. And to where, you know, the story, right?
Yeah.
You want to share the story or what?
Go ahead. Sure. I mean, I was little, so I don't know the exact details. But I think there was one night where there was a tornado warning and dad woke up and told everybody, and mom was all freaking out and scared about it. So she says, oh, we got to get to the basement. So I went down to the basement. Dad was making his way down to the basement. Of course, dad didn't really think there was going to be a tornado to come through. So he was kind of lackadaisical about getting down to the basement or whatever. And mom was like, did anybody tell Chad about the tornado? Somebody go tell Chad. So Isaac went up Chad's room, knocked on his door, woke him up. And then he was like, Chad, there's a tornado coming in. Chad gets out of bed, starts freaking out, and just plows right through Isaac, starts running downstairs.
Yeah, I came from like an absolute dead sleep, but I just heard like tornado. And again, I was pretty afraid of storms. I did not like storms. And so like before Isaac even had the time to get out of my way, even though he was talking to me when I was in my dead sleep, I just ran right over him and I was downstairs.
Yeah.
But no, I think it is interesting, you know, our life experiences. Man, I remember there was a guy that I used to work with at Kendrick's. And dude, I don't know how, but he had had a number of life experiences where he had driven up on accidents where people had actually passed away on accidents like 3 or 4 times, dude. It was like no joke. And I'm like, how in the world has that never happened to me? Now, obviously, I mitigate that by always being in bed by 8:30.
Right, I
think, you know, he was up at probably all times of the night and stuff like that. But it's like, dude, that's something that I've never had to see. And so when you have those type of experiences or those things happen to you, what else is going to happen? You know, you're going to be fearful.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think you were saying, to add on to that, I think, like you're saying, as a kid, your parents are afraid of, you're going to be scared of too. Like, if your parents are scared of, say they're scared of like pit bulls or something because they're aggressive or they have a tendency to bite people or whatever. So your parents never let you be around a pit bull because they're afraid of them. So in turn, it puts that thought into your mind. It's like, oh, well, I'm scared of pit bulls because I hear all these stories about it, but I've never actually had an experience. So I would just assume that's what they're all like. So just building fears that way.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there are people who are afraid of like germs, and maybe they had a loved one that was very susceptible mm-hmm. to germs, and so that those ended up affecting them, or, you know, in whatever way it was that all of these things affect us. I mean, if we look at our childhood, like mom, they used to live in a log cabin. When I was like 7 years old, somebody drove by our house with a .22 gun, shot out the windows, and they shot at essentially our mom, and it came like 2 inches from like her head. It completely missed her, no bullets or anything like that. But it's like those experiences. So then when we lived out at that log cabin, whenever people seemed to be driving wild mm-hmm. or we lived close to like a little bridge where people would go and swim and they were up at all hours of the night, those things were always like, okay, what's going down there now? What are they doing now? Like people would steal tractors and hide them. And it was just like a lot of nonsense that used to happen down that road. And it's just like, all that fear would get instilled whenever you'd hear like maybe the dogs barking, because we had a big, essentially a guard dog. And so when he would start barking late at night, he's like, uh-oh, you'd wake up and be like, uh-oh, what's happening tonight? Like, because of that previous experience, dude.
Yeah, that one experience just lingers in the back of your head. And it's like, is it going to happen again? Like you said, that one guy kept driving up on those accidents. And it's like, what if this happened one time and that's it? But what if it's not the only time that it happens? And then you keep building that situation in your head. And it's like, okay, well, if it does happen again, how am I going to prepare for it? And then you spend all this time worrying. And then by the time you're done worrying, the situation's already over and it's past and it didn't happen. But then it happens again and you go through that same process over and over.
Right, 100%. I mean, I've never been like mugged or robbed or anything like that, but could you imagine like walking down a street after that? Like, obviously, you know, we all have been through difficult times in life experiences. So the longer that you go after that experience happens without mm-hmm. something like that happening again, the more safety and the more of a cushion that creates, to where I think we can get stronger and more confident and realize the chances of that happening again are very, very minimal. So, you know, why am I spending time mentally thinking about this? But you do the best that you know how to be able to protect yourself from it happening again. And sometimes you just can't protect it 100% fully because it's something that's out of your control.
Yeah, exactly. And like you were saying, the more recent that it happened, I feel like the more forefront of your mind it's at. So you're more cautious. Like if you did get mugged walking down the street the next night, you probably would not be walking down the street at night ever for who knows how long, just because you're like, okay, not doing that anymore. Not happening again. That was a terrible experience. I'm not even going to give the chance of that happening again. Whereas it builds over the years, and maybe you start doing it again because it's like, okay, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And you start building yourself to it. But
yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, I know after I got fired from that job, it was like, well, dude, like, I don't want that to ever happen again. And my previous jobs, I remember being very, very nervous and having anxiety at the beginning of the jobs because it's like, am I doing well? I hope I'm performing well. I hope everything's, and it's just like, finally, I had to breathe and say, no, be confident in who you are. Do the best that you know how to do. If they don't accept you, it's move on and go somewhere else. It's fine. Which, you know, as we get older, it can be really, really difficult if we have to provide for ourselves with the cost of living the way it is now. So I mitigated that by saving more money so that I have a surplus, you know, a 6 month, a year, whatever that is, to create that little bit of a cushion so that if something like that were to happen in the future, I can then go and be able to move on and deal with it, you know?
Exactly.
So, dude, I think this was a really good episode. I really enjoyed talking about fears, even though I didn't feel like we had much planned of what we were going to say. I think we covered a lot. And, you know, guys, again, we would like to hear kind of what you have to say and how you're enjoying the episodes, anything like that. Message us. Did you have a story about dad you wanted to share?
Let me think of one real quick. I think... Since this one is on fears, I guess it would just, I don't know, kind of saying that he, not necessarily a story, but just kind of attributing to the kind of person that he was and saying that he may have had fears, but he never really showed them and he would always put on a strong face for us. So I guess it was kind of, in the worst situations, you want to be the person that people can rely on and be like, then look at this person in this situation. Maybe everybody else is freaking out, but you see this person and they're calm. So it kind of calms you down and then you calm down. So everybody else calms down and you kind of want to be that person that you seem put together and you can stay calm through situations like that. And I feel like he was definitely that person. Like I don't ever really remember him being scared of anything.
If he was, he never really shared it. Yeah, 100%. And I think it's that mindset of when everybody else is going through a difficult time or hurting that you try to set yourself up by learning, by being stable, and continuing to push yourself so that you can be the strongest person at that event. And so you can be the one who is the rock and the foundation to be able to help other people get through their things. And obviously, as a whole, you know, getting through them all together.
Yeah, exactly. And I think him being so family oriented, he kind of saw it as his duty to do that. And I think that that's something that he executed very well.
Yeah, and I think all of us as male figures, right? I think that's something that's kind of ingrown in all of us, that we want to be that provider. We want to be that security for the people that we are. And I think dad did a great job of teaching us those tools to have that desire to do it in the future for our kids.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
All righty.
Nice episode. Thanks, yes, guys. Sir.
Thanks, everybody.